This is Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The Leadership Challenge, one of the best-selling leadership books of all time, is considered by many as the most trusted source on becoming a better leader. With this fourth edition, James M. Kouzes and Barry Z. Posner issue a new collection of case studies relevant to today's world to illustrate a timeless mission that all great leaders share. Kouzes and Posner offer five basic points that the best leaders use to motivate. Jim Kouzes is an executive fellow at the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship at the Levy School of Business, Santa Clara University. Welcome to Edgewise, Jim.
Well, thank you.
Let's take a look at the five exemplary practices of leadership and discuss these in general. What are the five?
The five are, first of all, what we call model the way. It's about setting an example based upon a clear set of values and expectations. Inspire a shared vision, which is about being forward-looking, envisioning an ennobling and uplifting future, and then enlisting others in a shared and common purpose. The third is challenge the process, about searching for opportunities to grow and innovate and improve, and then to experiment and take risks. Fourthly, the practice of enabling others to act, which is about fostering collaboration and strengthening individual capacity. And lastly, the fifth practice is encourage the heart, celebrating the values and the victories and recognizing individuals for their contributions to success.
Now, when we talk about leaders, Jim, I want to be sure of one thing. We are talking about anyone who leads, or are we talking about those who head companies?
Leadership isn't the private reserve of a few charismatic individuals, and it's not about position at all. That's a misperception people have, I think, because the popular press tends to focus not on the average manager, the frontline supervisor, or the coach of a high school football team or tennis team or the individual volunteer who's leading a community group. All of those people are leaders. Yet the focus tends to be on the most senior leaders, the president of companies, the president of countries, the famous military leaders. Those people, while they are all leaders, are not the majority of leaders in the world. They are the minority of leaders in the world. And the majority of leaders are people who occupy those volunteer roles in the community, who are trying to pass a piece of legislation or invigorate a campaign to get adolescents involved in environmental programs, or first-line supervisors in business. In fact, the most influential leaders on a day-to-day basis are those who are our most immediate leaders, those with whom we have the most immediate and intimate contact. A frontline supervisor or your manager inside a corporation has much more influence on your day-to-day behavior than the chief executive officer.
One of the reasons why I even asked that question, I think that a lot of first-line supervisors and middle managers really don't recognize the fact that they're supposed to have a vision for their operation.
That's absolutely true. How do you have a vision of the future if you're in an organization where the strategy's developed at the top? And it's actually true to some extent. The people in the more senior positions are expected to have a longer-term view of the future than someone at the front line. But even if you're a first-line supervisor or a middle-level manager, you are expected to look out beyond the end of the current project you're working on. One way for people to think about this and personalize it for themselves is to imagine the current project that they're now working on and think about the end date of that project. Maybe it's 3 months, maybe it's a year down the road. As a leader, we then need to ask ourselves, what will we be engaged in when that project is over? That forces us to think longer term than people who are not in a leadership role.
Now, looking at your five exemplary practices of leadership, I want to focus on just a few of those. For example, enabling others to act. Now, that's relevant to supervisors, managers, all the way up to senior management, right?
Yes. And in fact, enable others to act accounts for more of what we call the explained variance in statistical terms of why people are effective than any of the other practices by themselves. the other practices, collectively account for more than one practice, but enable others to act has more of a contribution to outcome than other practices by themselves.
Based on your research, what advice would you give to leaders as to how they can maximize this role?
Enabling others to act is really about focusing on what the team and individuals need to function at their best. So the first place to start is by asking, what is it that motivates the people who are working together with me on this project or this initiative? What is it that interests them? What are their needs and aspirations? What are their hopes and dreams for the future? What can I do to make sure, if we value quality, for example, or we value innovation, what can I make sure we do to build the skills of the team to execute and the skills of the individuals to execute? All of this follows from having an orientation not to me as the leader, but to my constituents and the people engaged in this activity, and what do they need in order to perform at their best.
Now let's move on to another one of the practices, and it's the one that you call challenging the process. I can't help but think about risk as an opportunity. How can a leader make risk an opportunity and communicate that to their people?
There's one question we all ought to be asking ourselves continuously, which then brings up the question of risk and experimentation. And that question is, what have I done this week to improve so that I'm better this week than I was a week ago? If we want to continuously challenge the process, continuously improve the way we're doing things, that's the question we ought to ask ourselves on a weekly basis. That then forces us to say, what new technique have I tried? What new initiative have I fostered? What experiment have I engaged in? What new learning have I made happen this week so that I and others are better than we were the prior week? It's that kind of thinking which forces us to stay focused on improvement, innovation, doing something differently. Our research started initially when we asked people to report on a time when they performed at their best as leaders. So we wanted to know what were the best practices of leaders. And one of the things that was true and still remains true as we gather more and more cases is that people never did their best when they were keeping things the same. It's interesting that people report performing at their peak when they're changing something, doing something new, trying a new method, trying a new technique, engaged in something challenging and difficult. So if we are going to be at our best, we continuously must challenge ourselves and the organization to do something new and different.
Early on, you also talked about credibility. Does this fall into one of the five practices?
Credibility is primarily related to what we call model the way. And it's why we actually begin the leadership challenge with a discussion of that practice. Credibility is the foundation of leadership. If people don't believe in the leader personally, they will not believe the leader's message. So credibility is the most precious asset a leader has. When we ask people, what is credibility behaviorally? How do you know it when you see it? They tell us that it's practicing what you preach, setting a good example for others based upon the values that you hold, putting your money where your mouth is, walking the talk, doing what you say you will do. That requires leaders to do essentially two things. First of all, be clear about what you're going to say, and then make sure that what you do is aligned with what you say. So model the way is our way of making sure that leaders start their developmental process and the process of becoming an exemplary leader, that they model the way.
You mentioned encourage the heart, and I don't want to forget that one because a lot of people might not recognize how valuable that can be in building relationships with the people who report to them. Now, to me, that's fundamental for building followership. Would you agree?
Encouraging the heart is the expression of caring. One of the people we interviewed, Erwin Fetterman, he's now a venture capitalist, but he was president of Monolithic Memories at one time and a chief financial officer and a financial officer before that. He told us that people work harder and longer for leaders that they like, and they will like them in direct proportion to how they make them feel. That comment has always stuck with me because, in fact, it is absolutely true. If we like our leaders, if we respect our leaders, if we think that they have our interests in their hearts, we will perform at higher levels. When we don't like our leaders, when we think they have their own agendas, when we don't respect them, when we don't think they have our interests at heart, we are much less likely to want to do our best for them. Encouraging the heart is that practice which makes sure that we communicate to others that we value their performance, that we recognize that they're working hard and diligently on behalf of the common values and common vision that we share, and that we also recognize that we have to pause every now and then, much as we do periodically in our countries, to celebrate certain milestones, to celebrate particular achievements. That creates a climate in which people feel cared for and respected, and it's absolutely critical to getting extraordinary things done in an organization.
Jim, what one thing can a leader do to communicate that message? A lot of times a manager will say, well, I do performance appraisals. I don't have enough time to praise regularly. Managers, supervisors, executives, what can they do to demonstrate a caring for the people who report to them?
There's a simple two-word answer to that, and it's thank you. If we can say thank you more often every day, we will have made some progress in accomplishing that. You brought up performance appraisals, and people don't have time for praise. Here's a piece of data to reflect on. The research shows very clearly that at work, if the positives don't outweigh the negatives by a factor of 3-1, people will not be fully engaged in their work. And outside of work, it has to be at least 5-1 in our family relationships for people to feel fully involved in the relationship. Positive must outweigh negative. So a supervisor or manager says, I don't have time for praise. I don't have time for all this happy talk, is actually undermining best performance. Positives have to outweigh negatives for people to feel that they want to give their best. And the data is very clear about that.
Are we talking about documented performance appraisals or simply acts of benevolence towards employees?
It's even simpler than that. It's about my intonation in my voice, whether when somebody offers an idea, suggestion, or gives me feedback, I have a scowl or a smile on my face. It is not just about written words. It is about the spoken word and nonverbal behavior. It's the whole package as a leader. If I send off signals by my nonverbals that are incongruous with a positive message, I'm not going to be engaging the people that I work with.
And one final question here. In your book, you talk about the need for us to conduct a personal audit periodically. How should we do this?
Personal audit can be done, of course, using questions, a questionnaire, like a 360-degree feedback, but on a day-to-day basis, perhaps one simple question would suffice. At the end of every day, ask yourself, what have I done today that exemplifies the values that I espouse? What have I done today that perhaps even inadvertently sent the wrong signal? And what can I make sure I do tomorrow so that others see that I am committed to the values and beliefs that I espouse? Just asking those questions is a form of an audit that we can all engage in every day.
The book is entitled The Leadership Challenge, and one of the authors, James M. Kousis, has been our guest today. James, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Hi, my name is Bettina Neidhardt. I am the AMA Portfolio Manager for Leadership Development. And with me in the studio here, I have Ruth Nelson, one of our AMA faculty members and lead speakers. Hello and welcome, Ruth.
Pleasure to be here with you, Bettina.
Listening to Jim speak, and I was thinking about one of our seminars, one of our most successful ones, actually, Leading with Emotional Intelligence. You've taught this course many, many times. You're a real expert on leading with emotional intelligence. How do some of the key items that he mentioned, such as modeling, by example, sharing the vision, how does that resonate with you in terms of what we provide in the seminar?
We do know that people are the most important resource in any organization. And when you have the self-knowledge, when you are the role model, then you could begin to understand other people. And the more you understand other people, then you can empower them. So we look at, how do you coach with emotional intelligence? How do you motivate with emotional intelligence? And how do you delegate? We find that a lot of people have specific fears about delegation. We look at that, and we also give you a model for how to delegate.
Now, people may think that this course is philosophical, that it's very theoretical. Could you give us a concrete example of maybe something you encountered in a recent program where somebody really had a breakthrough experience in terms of leading with emotional intelligence?
I certainly can. There was one woman, for the first day, she was very skeptical. She came in after break on the second day, absolutely radiant. She had given someone a promotion. She just checked in with him at break time, and he said to her, "I want to thank you for this opportunity." And she said, in the past, she would have said, "Okay." And what she said was, "No, I have to thank you for working so hard that I was able to give you this promotion." And she said, the reception after that from him was so exuberant. So just that little thing, she came back in. She said, "I can't believe I was able to do this already."
Thanks again. And to find out more about Leading with Emotional Intelligence, course number 2133, or any other leadership courses, just go to our website at amanet.org.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback. So please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.